secrets that my millionaire mentors taught me about business and success. Hi, this is Gary Cox. You know, mentoring has been a key to success since man's very existence. Mentoring is perhaps the smartest thing that one can do to get ahead of the learning curve in business. It will save you a tremendous amount of time, and the savings financially can virtually be priceless. Now, for those of you who already have my first 6-CD or cassette Millionaire Mentor program, this new 20-CD series includes that program as well in the first 6 CDs. I got so much positive feedback from that first program that I decided to include more millionaire mentors, such as Ron Rice, the founder of Hawaiian Tropic, internationally known motivational speaker Les Brown, and more information from Manu Mattani, one of the millionaire mentors that I had when I was 16 years old. This program is designed to share with you the priceless knowledge that was shared with me years ago since I started my first business at age 11 and my second at 15. You know, along the way, I've been very fortunate to have learned a tremendous amount of the do's and the don'ts about business. This program is put together with the hopes of saving you time and to keep your financial losses at a low and increase your financial gains. When I was younger, I was influenced by 2 millionaires and then later by a billionaire. There were obviously other people who influenced my business and success, but these 3 have made the most impact. I won't take much time giving you all the details and names of individuals right now. You'll get a lot of that throughout the program. The important thing is that you get insight from the knowledge that I share with you. What I'm most excited about in this program is the fact that later on, you will actually get to listen in as one of my millionaire mentors answers questions from some of my clients and friends. You won't want to miss that. Well, let's get started. When I was about 11 years old, as I had mentioned, I had started my first business. What in the world was I doing at 11? I started selling keychains. You know, years ago, beaded keychains and macrame keychains were very popular, so I made and sold them. It was obviously a very simple and basic business. You know, I remember getting my little ledger, and one section I had allocated for expenses and the other section for my gross income. And really, for my age, the income really wasn't that gross. As a young child, I knew from as early as I could remember that I was going to be an entrepreneur. I was born and raised in the island of Jamaica, and all the men on my father's side were all entrepreneurs and millionaires. So for me not to be a millionaire and successful would have really been out of the question. So at age 15, I was introduced to the jewelry business, and I was very intrigued by what was known as black coral. It's a rare coral, very much like pink coral. You may be familiar with that, but of course, obviously, the difference is the color. Black coral, when you pull it out of the ocean, it looks, it's pretty, you know, ugly. It's not attractive. It looks like a thick twig from a tree. But once you carve it and polish it, it is very, very beautiful. So what I did from that point was I had artists teach me how to carve this black coral. And I spent hours and hours and hours developing my skills. And at that time, you could actually purchase a pound of black coral for $10. And once you carved it, you could literally make hundreds and hundreds of dollars from that 1 pound. But as with any other product, if you can't sell it and make a profit, it's pretty useless. So my sales field was school. Most people in school, they weren't familiar with black coral and its value. So my job was to educate my potential customers in school by creating a value in my product. And I'll never forget my 7th grade teacher yelling at me in front of everyone in class, "Put that stupid black coral junk away." So, oh well, I educated and sold. Then I wanted to get my jewelry into jewelry stores. I wanted to take it to the next level. So I contacted an old family friend who owned several jewelry stores. He was soon to become one of my millionaire mentors. I tried hard to convince him to buy my black coral, but was very unsuccessful. He, in turn, showed me how he thought that I could make a lot more money with a lot less effort. So he made me a proposition, which I'll talk about in a moment. At the time I had approached him, I wasn't making much money with my new black coral designs. In fact, I was still in school, and I was in what was known as a work release program. You may be familiar with this. This is where the school allows you to spend part of your day, or usually the first part of your day at school, and then you get released early so you can have a job and go to work. To qualify for the program, obviously, you must have a job. I entered the program close to the end of my 11th grade year. I convinced the counselor that I would find a job, and I found a job at the airport. Now, I loved airplanes, and I thought that would be just, oh, what a great job. Soon after, I got fired. I will never forget that day. I went home and I cried like a baby. I got fired. What a blow. I was really in a dilemma now. You see, if I didn't find a job, I would be kicked out of the work release program at school, and that would mean I would have to go to school full time. And unfortunately for me, that was painful. Nearly as painful as being fired. Being fired, though, was one of the best things that ever happened to me. It hurt me so much, I vividly remember telling myself, "Self, I never want to go through that experience and feeling again as long as I live." The seed was heavily planted then to being a real entrepreneur. At this point, I only had two choices: find another job soon or go to school full time. Now, I was still trying to pursue the jewelry business, but that was really like my own thing. It was on the side, and I didn't really work for someone, so that wouldn't count as a job to keep me in the work release program. I recall my teacher, who was in charge of the program, telling me that if I didn't get a job soon, I was going to be kicked out of the program. Time was running out, and he gave me 1 week to find a job. If I didn't find a job, he'd kick me out, or he had a job for me, and it was at a fast food restaurant. I hated going to school so much, I went ahead and took the fast food job. Now, I only had to work there for about 6 weeks because that was when the school year would end. And once the school year ended, I technically didn't have to even have a job because now it would be summertime and I wouldn't be under the guidelines or subject to the guidelines or the restrictions of the work release program. So I went ahead and started that job, and I hated every minute of it. I mean every minute of it. I'd come home smelling like a hamburger and french fries. But I did learn some valuable lessons, which we'll talk about in a little bit. You know, soon after getting that fast food job, I made one more attempt to meet with my millionaire friend and try to convince him to buy my jewelry. But he still wasn't interested. He did say that he would help me in another way, though. He offered to consign me about $500 worth of fine gold jewelry. He said I'd have to come back in 1 week. What I sold in that week, I would pay him for it and keep the profit. Then he said if I wanted to continue purchasing more jewelry after the first week, that he would no longer consign it to me, but he would sell it to me at wholesale prices, and I would have to pay for it in advance. Now, though, I had gold necklaces to sell with my black coral pendants and other jewelry. I already had many clients from school that were interested in my work, so now all I had to do was show them my new line of fine jewelry. It was a hit. The first week went great. Remember now, though, whatever I took the second time to sell, this was all mine. If I didn't sell it, I kept it. I went back the following week, and I took all the money that I had from the bank, minus $10. Here's another lesson here. Take risks. It was all of about $268, plus I had to have some gas money for the car, and that was going to be $10. I took the jewelry, and I was selling a lot of it. I remember going into the bathroom in school and counting the money so no one could see me doing it. Hundreds of dollars, and that wasn't too bad for a teenager over 20 or 30 years ago. I knew I was on to something. Then at times, some of the people who bought their jewelry from me, they would break their necklaces and they would need it fixed. So that now led me into learning how to fix fine jewelry, which eventually led me into learning how to manufacture the jewelry. Now I really had a challenge. I love my business so much that I didn't even want to go to school. And I had still the 1 year left to go, and I couldn't see going to school, which to me was very boring, and I would miss out on the chance of continuing to build my business and making thousands of dollars. Again, it seemed to me that I only had two choices: quit school or continue my business. But what if I could do both? I decided to talk to my principal about my problem. We called him Doc. You may not know this, but schools today are actually given an allocation of X amount of dollars for every student they have enrolled and attend school. Now, this is what I call leverage. When I met with Doc, I told him that I wasn't interested in school and I knew that I would eventually quit, and I told him why. I did let him know that I found out if I did quit, he would lose some funding. If I stay in school, he keeps the funding. See the leverage at work here? Then I made a proposition with him. I told him that for my senior year, I would like to be self-employed instead of going to school. I didn't even want to show up in school. I didn't even want to come to school part-time. I also wanted to grade myself, being that, of course, I would be my own boss. I also told him respectfully that I would also expect to receive my diploma at the end of the year. You know, when you stop and think about it, that was really an absurd request. So Doc thought about it for a minute, scratched his head, looked at me, scratched his head a bit more and said, "Yes." I about fell backwards off the chair I was sitting in. I tried everything I could to keep my composure. I was so excited. So the following September, I didn't even have to show up for class. I showed up to my office. The principal, you know, of course, would send somebody out every couple weeks to make sure I was keeping my word, and I did. I didn't want to mess up an opportunity like that one, that's for sure. Up until this point in the program, there are a few lessons that I've learned that I think is really worth talking about. Let's discuss them a bit. Remember when I told you that I got fired? It was the first and last time. Why was it the last time? Because I swore I would do everything in my power to never be put in a position again where someone could fire me. It was a devastating feeling that motivated me to create and control my own destiny. What about you? Do you control and create your own destiny, or does someone do it for you? Simply put, if you don't control and create your own destiny, someone does it for you. Whether you're an entrepreneur or work for someone, are you constantly improving your skills and abilities so that you could virtually go anywhere at any time and be successful financially? In other words, are you taking control if that's a personal goal for you? And boy, I hope it is. All my mentors had control of their destiny. They could all tell me how they got their start and every move they made to get from point A to B, to B to C, and so on. It was calculated and thought out. Now, I personally keep adjusting my lifestyle and business so that I can maintain control. It's a valuable asset that fewer and fewer people today seem to be enjoying. Make sure you're one of the few that enjoy it. Your position today, let's say financially, is it by chance or choice? If you control your own destiny, you will appreciate that it is a choice, isn't it? Now, I have to tell you that years later, I met up with a gentleman who fired me. As I approached him, I told him how appreciative I was for him firing me. I kept telling him, thank you, thank you, thank you. He remembered me well, and I don't think he thought I was too humorous. I proceeded to tell him all the opportunities that were open to me because I didn't work for him and the success that I've enjoyed since then. Thank you, I continued. Yes, being fired from my job was one of the best things that could have ever happened to me. Recall that after being fired that I had to work at that fast food restaurant. Well, that wasn't the best thing that happened to me, but the lessons it taught me were priceless. You know, the greatest lesson I learned was what it really meant to work hard and give an honest day's worth of work for a day's wage. You literally couldn't stand there for 30 seconds to a minute without being told to wipe something or sweep something up. There was no goofing off. None. Though I thought that was a bit much and a little overboard, it did teach or force you to see how valuable time was. Time is a valuable asset that most people just waste and throw away. My mentors knew the value of time. One mentor never leaves his office to go out to lunch. Only on rare occasions will he ever leave the office to do so. He always eats in the office and has it brought to him. Anyone that has to meet with him during his lunch also has lunch with him in the office. Sounds a little bit overboard? Not for this billionaire mentor of mine. Let's assume you work 8 hours a day, or even 10 for that matter, and you take 1 hour each day for lunch. 10% or more of your time daily goes to eating lunch. What a waste of time. Now, it goes without saying that there are some jobs or businesses that require you to take your clients out to lunch and dinner, or maybe, you know, play a game of golf, and I'm not saying that that's a waste of time. In some businesses, that's a must. But if you're just eating by yourself or maybe with a bunch of work buddies goofing off, think about the possible waste of time that that might be. I personally cannot conceive leaving my office to take an hour off to go out and eat lunch. I couldn't tell you when I've ever done that. Now, obviously, when I'm out on the road traveling for a speaking engagement, well, that's a different story. But while I'm in the office, I stay put. Now, at times, I have friends or business associates calling me to tell me that, you know, they're passing through town and they'd like to get together with me and take me out to lunch. I say, sure, we'll eat at my office and we'll have lunch ready for you when you get here. This is just part of the way that I stay focused. Not to mention, I enjoy what I do. Now, if I enjoy what I do, why do I really need to leave the office for an hour a day? That's where all the action is, and I want to be in the middle of the action all the time. I was also taught very early in business that managing time and taking consistent action equals results, results, results. Now, let's stop and think about that for a moment. For example, if it takes you 100 action steps over a period of, say, 3 months to achieve a specific goal, wouldn't it be reasonable to assume that if you could take those 100 steps in 2 months, that you would attain your goal a month sooner? Of course. The only way that you can do that is to master your time. Successful people are time misers. Always look for ways to keep mastering your time. Now, I try to stay focused on mastering my time by looking for ways where I might be able to actually do two or three things at one time. Let me give you a couple examples of this. Maybe while I'm driving a car, I might pop in a program or two and listen to that instead of the radio. While I'm on the phone and I'm on hold, you know, sometimes you can be on hold for a minute or two. Well, if I'm going to be on hold for a while, I'll sign a thank you card for someone. I keep a stack of them on the desk by my phone. When I'm traveling, sometimes I'll invite a client or a business associate to travel with me so that we can further discuss business details while we're in the air. The ideas can be endless. For me, the ability to master my time and be able to do several things at one time has proven to be one of my most valuable abilities. Be sure to make it one of yours. You know, my millionaire mentors always believed in taking risks. It's a word that makes some smile and others very squirmish. There is no doubt about it, though, that taking risks can hurt and be very painful psychologically and especially in the wallet. But not taking risks gets us nowhere even faster. For me, taking a risk at age 16 and 17 really wasn't that difficult. I mean, I really didn't have much to lose by taking a lot of risks. My risk was quitting my fast food job and pursuing my jewelry business. Now, to me, that really wasn't a big deal. My real motivation at that age wasn't to be financially successful. It was my ticket from flipping burgers and keeping myself from smelling like a French fry and getting out of school. So I really didn't seem to have too much to risk at that time. Overall, when you look at it, it is some risk to a degree. But either way, we have to learn to take risks. You know, usually when someone wants to start their own business or get into sales or selling, they soon realize how much risk is involved if they really want to get results. There were times that we got so low on money that we literally had negative figures in our checking account. I remember having as much as $18,000 in the hole or in the red. That's right, our checking account showed minus $18,000. You talk about robbing Peter to pay Paul. And I by no means recommend that you do anything like this. And I certainly don't want to ever go through that again. I remember the day that we were able to deposit enough money that the checkbook showed $0. We were so happy. Can you imagine? We were happy because we didn't have any money in our checking account. What an accomplishment. From negative thousands of dollars to a zero balance. Yahoo! I literally will never forget that day. It was the coolest thing. Perception's a crazy thing, isn't it? You know, there were times that we could barely afford to mail our promotional materials to companies. And that's pretty sad. You know, you contact the company and try to get their business, and they want you to mail them some literature about what you're offering, and you can't even afford the stamps to mail the stuff out. And then the post office offered the option to buy postage stamps with credit cards. Yes, I was back in business again. I was so glad when I heard that. I had lots of credit, and I put thousands of dollars of stamps on my credit cards. You know, the reason I share these grueling stories of mine with you is that I know that you will experience hard times if you already haven't or are presently doing so. I don't want you to feel alone. These are the things that successful people go through to build their businesses. It's the risk-taking that separates the men from the boys. If it was easy, you know the rest, everyone would be doing it. You know, there is a difference between calculated risks and foolish ones. Gambling on horses and dogs and at the casinos, that's not considered a calculated risk. Some people might argue and say the same about getting into business or sales or selling. How can that be a calculated risk, they might ask? Well, granted, nearly 50% of businesses that start up end up folding in less than, about 3 years. But why? Many of those who start up a business don't know how to manage their business. They don't even know anything about marketing or how to manage people. If they would focus on these things, they would dramatically increase their chances of success. One common thing that I found true with all my mentors is that if you took every dime from them, they would be able to build their wealth right back up. The next lesson that I learned was to ask. That word has taken me very far. Ask, ask, and ask some more. If I didn't ask Doc, my high school principal, to let me start my own business full-time so I wouldn't have to go to school, I obviously wouldn't have been able to do so. Now, when you think about it, the worst-case scenario that could happen to us by asking is what? You get a no. Keep asking and getting no's. Sooner or later, you've got to get a yes somewhere in there, don't you think? Now, asking Doc what I asked him was way off in left field. I mean, way off. That's the stuff that you have to ask for, the left field stuff. Why? Because no one else is asking it, so you may as well be the one. So if you want to move forward, you must learn to ask. At the same time, make sure you develop the attitude to handle the no's. Once you master that, you will continue to keep asking and asking until you get what you want. I wanted to be my own boss. I wanted to have my own business. I didn't want it when I was 20 or 30 or 40. I wanted it during my senior year in school, and I wanted my diploma too. So I asked. Now, we might not always get what we ask for, but it doesn't hurt to try. Ever wonder why kids are so good at asking for things? They're the best at it, aren't they? We need to take a lesson from them. When they ask and ask and ask, they don't take it personally if they get a no like many people do. That's not to say they don't pout about it. Oh, well, maybe that's the key. They keep pouting and pouting, and it reminds them even more so how bad they want it. It motivates them to ask and ask again and again. They stay focused. They are relentless in their quest to conquer. They want it bad. It's a great attitude to have, never giving up. You know, when I went into Doc's office focused, I wasn't bluffing him at all. My mind was set. Unfortunately, if he had said no, I would have quit school. But you can bet I would have asked him 20 more times again if he decided to tell me no. The moral of the story, ask, ask, and ask again. Once I got on my way with my business, I realized that I had so much to learn. I didn't even have much understanding really about money and how it worked. I did learn, though, that for me to be successful financially, I would have to take risks, and that would involve more money. Money, unfortunately, that I didn't have. My first big mistake with money was blowing it on expensive toys. Now, don't get me wrong, there's nothing wrong with expensive toys if you have the money. I went ahead and bought radio-controlled airplanes because I really wanted to learn to fly them. I was really never any good at it. I was too impatient to learn how, so I ended up crashing the airplanes in trees, and I even bought a $700 radio-controlled helicopter that I never flew. I was too afraid that I was going to crash it. I remember just sitting it in my living room and spinning the rotor blades round and round and round. That was enough to keep me happy. At 17, I bought a sports car, and my payments were nearly $400 a month. And that was a lot of money for a 17-year-old back then, not to mention the insurance and all the other stuff that came along with it. Unfortunately, the car was a real lemon. It was constantly breaking down and down, and a year later, I handed it back to the finance company. Now, something good did come out of all that. No, the voluntary repossession didn't go against my credit, at least not for long. I soon found out that my loan was not legally binding. At the time I purchased a car, a 17-year-old could not legally bind and sign a contract under Florida law. I guess you could say I got off by the skin of my teeth on that one. The moral of the story is, live way within your means. One of my mentors was so strong about never financing a car. He actually despised the thought of it. He helped me to realize that cars really run better when they're paid off. So from that time on, I've realized the importance of not financing a car. And you know, I think they do run a lot better when they are paid off. And did you notice that I said not to just live within your means, but way within your means? Do you? Have you ever wondered why most people don't or can't live within their means? There are really, from what I found out and discovered or researched, if you will, in watching and observing people, there seems to be really two main reasons for this. One is pride, and the second is instant gratification. Let's spend some time to talk about this. Number one, pride. Sometimes we want to be seen in that fancy car and that fancy house, and call it peer pressure for that matter. We gotta feel like we have to keep up with the Joneses and everybody else. It's not worth it. If you work hard on a plan and you stay focused and you keep chipping away at it, success will come. Borrowing money and getting loans for cars and boats will eat you alive. They are not asset-building ventures. Sometimes we're afraid to drive into something that's not so fancy for fear of what somebody might think. Again, don't get me wrong here. Depending on your job or career, you might need a fancier car. Maybe you're in real estate. You certainly wouldn't want to drive your clients around in a beat-up old rusty pickup truck. But you have to use common sense here. I think you understand the principle. But more than pride, it seems to be the instant gratification that gets people. Wanting that instant gratification is a cancer to your success. I think I've been blessed with the ability to put off that instant gratification and wait to reap the benefits. Many young couples fall into this instant gratification category. They want the house right away, you know, the new car, the furniture, and the vacations. Sooner or later, it catches up to them. Let me illustrate this further. Let's say you decide to run in a 26-mile marathon. Now, keep in mind that you're not a marathon runner, but let's say you're in decent shape. Now, imagine yourself lined up ready for the gun to go off. Then the gun goes off. Do you think you could get ahead of a professional runner if you ran like mad once the race got started? Sure you could. Why? Because the smart, experienced runner starts off slower. They could bolt out from the starting line, but would they have any juice to finish the race? No way. Being that you don't have the experience or conditioning of a professional marathon runner, you will only be able to get in front of him or her for a very short time. In a matter of minutes, they'll have you whipped. That's what happens to us when we spend, or finance. You may think or feel that you're ahead because you have the toys and the luxuries, similar to the feeling or thinking you had when you were ahead of that seasoned runner, but it will only be short-lived. Don't run like mad buying things up and financing things. Don't get caught up into thinking you have to have everything now. Pace yourself. I remember when I had lost everything financially. When I remarried, I worked on building my business back up again, and that was very, very difficult. We put every penny back into the business, and I mean every penny. Our friends would ask us out to dinner, and for years we never went out. I felt the money was better spent investing in our business, and many times, really honestly, we didn't even have the spare money. Oh, once in a while we would go out, but it was on a very, very rare occasion. For about the first 7 or 8 years of our marriage, I literally never had a dollar bill in my pocket, and I mean that literally. At times it would be very difficult to be that disciplined, but we put the instant gratification aside because we were focused and we could see the big picture. We could see our goals and what we could have later if we hung in there now. What is so interesting about all this is that now we ask our friends to go places with us, the same ones that asked us years ago, but most of them have had to file bankruptcy and don't get to do much. If I had to do it all over again, I would do it exactly the same way. I put off 5 or 8 years of instant gratification so that we can do the things now that we want. We own several airplanes, we get to travel all over, and we love it. It paid off, and it will for you. Believing in your future goals and your ability to attain them is equivalent to how much of that instant gratification you can put off. What's the key, though, to being able to put this instant gratification aside? The answer is that you have to have a vision. You must have a clear focus as to why you're putting yourself through this. You are making the sacrifice now because of your belief as to what your rewards will be in the future. When I wanted desperately to buy something, I told myself not to. I immediately focused on the future. I would say yes, but soon I'll be able to buy that and not even feel it financially. I pictured the future success. If you don't have a vision, if it's not super real to you, you won't last. You'll give in to the temptation of false success, buy now and pay later. To this day, we never finance anything to do with home life. Cars are paid for, furniture and the like. Homes, well, that's a different story and that's usually okay to finance. But subscribe to the motto, if you can't pay cash for it, don't pay for it at all. Now, financing business ventures, that's obviously a different story. Stop and think about what you and your friends have financed. The interest that people pay today is outrageous. As one of my mentors would say to me, he would say, yes, Gary, slavery is alive and well. The slavery is the interest in the buy now, pay later philosophy. Buy now and pay next year. Is that attractive or what? I just recently saw an ad for a company that builds pools. Swim now, pay later. That was the actual headliner of the ad. Then the justifying sets in. Well, if we don't have the payments for a year, we'll just pay it off next year when we get the first payment. Yeah, when donkeys fly, the average person who says that never does. But that does lead me to another point. Always pay more than your minimum payment. Always, even if it's a dollar. You might think just adding a dollar is useless, and financially, you're probably right. $1 won't make much of a difference, but you will be consciously creating a pattern that you must start paying more than the minimum. Then you're adding a dollar may lead into adding $10, $50, or $100, and that will make a difference. Now you've created a pattern. Then the next time you have to finance something, you can say, you know what, I'm going to double up on the payments. And you know, you really can. Why? Because you've created a track record of paying more than the minimum. It's not just talk. Now, if you have to finance things, narrow it down only to things that make you money or will generate income for you or will build assets. Charging clothes and the furniture and your lawnmower doesn't get it. My millionaire mentors always believed, though, that having lots of credit was important. Now, this may sound like a contradiction, but you never know when you might need some extra money. Maybe someone is selling something way under its value and they don't care, they just need to dump it to the first person who comes along with the cash. Having the available credit and resources would enable you to take advantage of that opportunity, which now leads me to another point. Always look to borrow money when you don't need it. That was a very wise lesson that I was taught. Always look to borrow money when you don't need it. You ever needed to borrow money before and didn't have the credit available or the necessary cash at hand? You started getting a bit desperate, didn't you? Now, do you think the person you're trying to borrow money from doesn't see that? Oh, you bet they do. Would you feel comfortable lending somebody money and telling them that you need to think about it for a few days and they say to you, well, I need it by tomorrow, 12 o'clock, so what do you say, huh? Will you lend me the money? No. Always look to borrow money when you don't need it. Now, here's how I would do this. I certainly didn't have enough money to invest in my business to reach the goals that I wanted to. I knew that I would have to find another means to borrow money because the banks wouldn't lend it to me, usually because I was too young. So I would approach some of my friends and family members and ask them if they would be in the position of lending me $1,000 here or $1,000 there or more if they could. Some would say yes and some would say no. Now keep in mind, I told them that I didn't need it now, but I would in the future. Always look to borrow money when you don't need it. When you let people know that you would like to borrow money from them in the future, it's so much easier for them to say yes than you asking them for money that you need right now. And here's how I put this into practice in my business. Sometimes a company would hire me, but they wouldn't pay me, oh, maybe, say, another month or two from now. Sometimes I had a contract that I wouldn't get the money for 6 months or even longer. So I would show my receipts to my potential lenders and tell them that I would give them the check when it comes in and pay them a decided amount of interest on top of that. I would show them the date of the receipt, and when the check would come in, it would be mailed to them immediately. Once I got the check, I immediately made sure I mailed it to them. I would never give them some bogus excuse or lie to them and tell them, well, it didn't come in yet, or I needed the money because of this, or whatever. I kept my word. I was looking to build long-term relationships and a track record of integrity and honesty. I've never forgotten those people, and now I'll do what I can to help them if they need assistance, or maybe I'll give them a gift. I'll do something as a way of thanking them for how they've helped me in past times. Now, did I always pay my loans on time? Oh, I'd be lying to you if I said yes. Let me share with you, though, how you can gain incredible respect from people who you loan money from, even if you haven't been able to pay them back on time on a regular basis. Now, this more so applies to monies that you would borrow from individuals, not by conventional means such as, you know, banks or other lending institutions. They don't seem to be as friendly and flexible. Most people don't start off going into business with loads of capital, so it's inevitable that there are times that you're going to have to borrow money. Now, I think most people would also agree that you have to put a plan in place just in case you are unable to pay back your loans on time. Now, I would be able to predict well in advance of a specific date that I owed a payment to someone that I might not be able to pay them back on time. That's not very hard to do. If your business is slow and things aren't going as well as you planned, you usually know weeks ahead of time that you're not going to make the bills. That's the time when you want to approach the lender. I'll give you an example. Some years ago, I was renting an office and I knew about 3 weeks before rent was due that I was going to have a hard time paying the rent that month. I was going to be at least 2 months late. So I met with the landlord and I told him that I really felt embarrassed even having this conversation with him, but things were not going well as I expected them to go, and it looks like I was going to be about a week or two late on next month's rent. I continued to tell him that I would rather tell him this now than be late and give him a bunch of stories and excuses as to why I don't have the rent. The landlord told me that he had been in the same predicament himself when he used to rent, and he understood. Now, as I left his office, he said to me, Gary, you know, I have a lot of respect for you because you were telling me this in advance. And let me tell you, that made me really feel good. But friends, it's that simple. Unfortunately, most people don't operate this way. How stupid! If someone owes you money and they've agreed to pay you a payment or all of it by the end of the month, wouldn't you have so much more respect for them if they approached you well in advance of the due date to tell you that they're running a little bit behind, as opposed to them not telling you and then you're wondering where they are when the payment's due? And now they're dodging your phone calls because you want to collect the money. It never ceases to amaze me why people don't do this. Granted, it involves swallowing your pride a bit, or maybe a lot, but I'd rather have that reputation than being a wimp because I don't have enough spine to tell the lender that I'm going to be late on a payment, then I have to dodge them for several weeks until I finally get the money. Believe me, try this one. Swallow your pride. It will be more than worth it. Let me go further and tell you why. If you allowed someone to borrow money from you and they have been very trustworthy and regular in paying you back, but something happens where they can't pay you back on time, maybe they've had some rough times, but they tell you well in advance that they're running a bit behind on the next payment or two, and then they follow through on those payments and finally pay off the loan. My question to you is, would you be willing to help them out again in the future? I would think so. Why? You know they will be willing to keep you informed if things don't go as planned. You won't have to go hunting them down. They've built a solid track record with you. Now, it goes without saying that if you are the one borrowing money and you're going to be late, you certainly wouldn't want to make this a habit every month. That's referring to as abusing a good thing, and that will certainly eventually backfire on you. It's very, very rare that I lend money, and I have a philosophy on lending money to family and friends. It's like my philosophy on stocks. You only invest what you can afford to lose. When I do lend money, I start off with the same pitch every time. Here it is. I will lend you this money, but only under these conditions. By the way, these conditions are in writing. That your payment be made exactly on the date that we agreed, and if for some reason you cannot make it on time, then tell me well in advance that you're unable to pay me back on time. I feel that if I'm assisting you, it's only fair to ask that of you. I also tell them that it's not my responsibility to come hunting them down and leaving them messages to find out where my payment is. Now, of course, they want the money, so they what? They agree to it. And unfortunately, I cannot recall one person that I've helped out ever following through on this agreement. Isn't that sad? Most people don't operate this way. I remember one day going to a banker to borrow money to purchase an airplane for my travel needs. The man wouldn't give me time of day because he said that I had too much debt. Now, I knew I could afford the airplane because I was spending over $2,000 a month renting one. He wouldn't even show me the professionalism to listen to my presentation, and I had spent hours going over it. I mean, I was really prepared for this presentation. I brought him a TV VCR to show him my video presentation, and he just shot me down. He didn't realize it, but he set a flame off under me. I was determined to accomplish my goal. 1 month later, I was a proud owner of a new airplane, and I sent him a photograph thanking him for telling me no. I told him he really motivated me, and I wanted to send him a picture of the plane to thank him for the motivation. As I started progressing in my jewelry business, I made it a point to spend as much time as possible with my millionaire mentors. I was really hungry to learn from them. I observed that most people don't really understand money, and when they think about making $1 million, they think many times about working their 9-to-5 job at X amount of dollars an hour to eventually make $1 million. Stop and think about that. That would take forever. Unless you found someone to pay you over $2,000 an hour, every day, for the entire year. But starting some type of venture or investment can make that possible. But there was a very important trick to all this. It was something that I noticed that all my millionaire mentors had in common with each other. They were like a stamp. They stuck to one thing and they did it very well. For me, that was very difficult, even though I had only done two things, the jewelry business and what I'm doing now, because I was always looking for opportunities and ideas, and I just wanted to jump on the bandwagon. I was an adrenaline junkie. I was excited about new ideas. My millionaire mentors, they weren't. Why? Because they were like a stamp. They stuck to one thing. By sticking to one thing, you build momentum. You build a business. I learned from them that you usually start off with a lot more time than money. So while you're in that position, invest your blood, sweat, and tears. If you play your cards right and do what you're supposed to do, you will eventually get a conversion. That's where you'll eventually have more money than time. That might be the time you want to consider branching off to other areas. Then you'll have the resources to pay other people to get the job done, and then you can go off into those other ventures. I see people often look for the pie in the sky. You know, they get all excited about starting a business, not really understanding what's really involved. And then sooner or later, they get on those hard times, things don't go right, and now because they can't see the need to hang in there, or they don't see that need, someone shows them this business idea which sounded as appealing as the last one, and they quit the previous business to jump into this one, and that same pattern will go on for years and years. In other words, they will never be like a stamp. Stick to one thing. You know what that reminds me of? That reminds me of kittens. People like this become like little kittens. Think about playing with a little kitten. They are so easily distracted and they can't stay focused. You know, they're playing with a ball and you pick up a string and drag that in front of them. What do? They go chasing the string. Now as they're chasing the string, let's say you drag a little stuffed mouse in front of the string with the other hand, now they're chasing the stuffed mouse. One distraction after another. Don't be like that kitten. Stay focused and stick to one thing.